andiamo un po' bocciato. Così.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome all of you to this meeting of our portfolio committee. Special word of welcome to our DG. And your entourage, our members of the portfolio committee, see the people who represent the media here, you're all welcome. We have on our agenda for this meeting only one item, and that is the presentation of the annual report of the Department of Public Enterprises. I think it will be in order for me to commend the DG. Of course, there are people who support you in your work. Your entire staff complement for, again, having or receiving an unqualified report. We've been reliably told that you are one of very few departments. In fact, to be exact, one of three departments that have consistently, you know, received an unqualified report from the AT. And we'd like to commend you for that. And we hope that you will maintain this position. I think it would be very important for you to sustain this level of performance. But because we are you're just part of a number of other departments that form our government, you know, we hope that you will share with your colleagues, other DGs, your magic formula. I know there's no magic in it anyway. It's just hard work. It's just hard work. It's dedication. It's commitment. Passion for what you do. And you know, like I said, you're only one department amongst many other departments. And if we have to succeed as a government, we have to fire all cylinders. And it is very important that when you meet, at, I know you've got meetings or fora where you meet with your colleagues, you know, share some of these ideas with them. I know you also have your, what I refer to as some infantile competition, where DGs want to outsmart one another. but I think they can learn a lot from you, you know, and raise this with them, because you don't want to just be ahead of everybody all the time. You want to take everybody along with you. So we want to commend you for this good work, and we want to wish you well, and the entire team. You know, if I wish people well, there's only one thing I wish them well in, and that's good health. because without that you can't do anything. You know, so can only wish you good health during your stay in this department, and all those who are surrounding you. You know, keep up the good work, the team spirit, and let's be the winning nation that we want to be. PG, like I said, we are really here to listen to you and to clarify us on some areas in which we are not so clear on. We have questions and concerns, I guess. And I hope you and your team will be able to clarify us on those. I'm going to hand over to the DG to lead us in his presentation. I think it's one of the things that I always forget, and I'm always reminded that now when you start your meeting, let people introduce themselves first, because we want to know who we're meeting in this room. And I always forget that. I think I'm very informal in my approach of doing things, and I must learn some of the things, because they are important, I'm told. I will request members to introduce themselves, and then the DG and your team but I think there are members of our staff as well. I'll have them introduce themselves. For those that I've never met, my name is Peter Malaveka. I am the chairperson of this committee. We'll go this way.
My name is Ogun Mugwena. I'm a member of the committee.
Morning. My name is Rose Santo. I'm a member of the committee.
Very good morning. Jake Dikwobo, a member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning. Gerard Kornoff, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Khololo, member of the committee.
Good morning, Lance Schreining, member of the committee.
Marnie van Dijk, member of the committee.
Yeah, Kessler.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Again, for those who I might not know, my name is Tidisa Madona. I'm the Director General of Public Enterprises. Thank you very much. Let me start off by letting my entourage introduce themselves, and then we can get to the business of the day. Please.
Morning. I'm Raisi Velipule, Deputy DG, NDP.
I am Chris Foley, the Deputy Director General for Energy and Broadband at DPE.
Good morning. I'm Mapiesi Mukuru, Deputy Director General for Legal and Governance.
Good morning. My name is Anthony Kamungoma, Acting DDG, Chief Investment and Portfolio Manager.
Good morning. My name is Fashani Mukombo, the Acting DDG for Safcon.
Edwin Richkin, Strategic Project Advisor, DPE.
Good
Service, Srinivasan, Corporate Services, DG. Samira Mohammed, Head Director General's Office.
Makhosan Ngozi, Head of Communication.
Masabong Mdogali, PLO Deputy Minister's Office. Ed Manduwana from DPE.
Bayanda Mzoneli from DPE.
Richard Mandu from DPE.
Sorry, Richard Mandu from DPE.
Mike Seri from Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Mike Seri, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Mzwandi Lekhadebe, Chief Director, AGR and International Relations, DPE.
Karen Davidis from ESCOM.
Kiaka Morami from ESCOM.
Lufanda Gia from ESCOM.
Londiwe Buteleze from Business Report.
And next to me here is Tisang Muchumi. He's the committee secretary.
Thank you, Pastor Chairperson. let me just indicate that the annual report of the department was tabled in Parliament in accordance with the applicable statutes. And I know that the committee has had the report for quite some while. We will, in presenting the report, cover the areas that are indicated on the screen. Firstly, to contextualize the report in the current economic environment. We will reflect briefly on the strategic thrust of the department, indicate how we are organized as a department, and then begin to reflect on some highlights for the period under review. We will then get in some detail on the performance of the programs of the department. We'll look at the financials and conclude with reflecting on some challenges. Chair, I'd like to thank you very much for your kind words. When we get to that point about annual report and governance issues, I will make some reflections on some of the issues that you've covered. In this slide, we reflect on the challenges of our economy, the challenges of our country, which are familiar to the committee, so I'm not going to spend too much time on them. The challenge of growing the economy, the challenge of dealing with employment, the challenge of enhancing the capabilities of our economy, industrialization, and so on. And, of course, the challenges of transformation. Of including marginalized people, previously disadvantaged people, black people, in the economy. In the following slides, we make some reflections on the performance of the economy. The economy in the period under review at the end of the last quarter of that period. So growth rate rise to 2.8%, suggesting that we may have been turning the corner from the recession. We now know that all of that is very fragile. In fact, most accounts suggest that we are slipping back into recession again, because our economy is very much dependent on the global economy. So when the global economy goes into recession, it's only a matter of time that we ourselves are affected by that. It's not a question of if, but rather of the extent which we get affected. And therefore, what policies, mitigating measures as a government we are able to take to prevent the recession from harming and reversing some of the very important gains we've made in our country. The driver of performance in the period under review of commodities, it seemed that this time round we were making a very strong effort to benefit from the commodity boom. People suggested that we lost out in the last cycle. This time around, I think there's very strong efforts to make sure that we benefit from that, and therefore the issue of infrastructure is very critical in that in that context to ensure that we have a strong platform for export, and therefore the possibility of latching onto commodity demand. Household consumption expenditure also played an important role, notwithstanding very lukewarm performance. Consumers displayed a very high level of confidence. this may be driven by new entrants into the mainstream of the economy. The middle class, especially the black middle class, and so on. The state investment led by the public corporations and the SOEs has also been critical in ensuring that we keep the economy afloat in what has been very challenging circumstances. The infrastructure rollout and capital investment programs of our SOEs, in particular ESCOM, with the build program of new capacity, has also been important, driving subsectors like construction vehicles, machinery and equipment. Employment has not performed to the level that we expected, to the level that we need, although it's rose moderately in the final quarter of the period under review. This has been largely due to seasonal sectors. We know that during this period that we are entering into the so-called festive season. Employment rises, which in fact tends to be mainly temporary. Employment. We are still looking for ensuring that the economy delivers on decent work, which is stable and secure. Labor productivity continues to rise, which is pleasing, because the whole issue of productivity and how we increase productivity across the economy is a key issue. In economic policy debates, we are not going to drive the economy to higher levels if this area of productivity of labour doesn't play its part. So hopefully this will be something which, in future debates, we attack much more. Robustly than has been seen so far. I've spoken about public sector infrastructure spending, which has been increasing, and between the period 2006-07 to the last year, it's increased from 4.6 to 9.8, and it's expected to grow over the medium period, totaling to 800 billion rand. The key issue is how will the money be spent? Will the money be spent wisely? And more specifically, will the money be spent productively so that at the end of this, the productive capacity of the economy has increased? The DPE, in the context of all of this, has had a few elements of our strategy The first being to integrate the strategic mandates of the SOEs into policy, looking at tracking the impact of the SOEs on the economy, particularly impact through suppliers and customers of the SOEs. We've also been looking at the structure of the industries in which our companies operate, particularly how they interface with the private sector, which is something which we will give greater attention to in the period ahead. We've also been looking at the operational financial performance of the SOEs, and I know that each of them are reporting to Parliament independently, so I'm sure the committee is having the opportunity to engage with them on those matters. Thirdly, we've been looking at coordination across government. It is important because the sectors in which our SOEs operate, we share with a number of policy departments, Department of Energy, Department of Transport, Department of Rural Development, Department of Trade and Industry, and so on. So how we coordinate with these departments with a view to creating a positive, supportive environment for our SOEs is critical. We've been giving this area systematic attention. We're looking at funding solutions. Clearly, the demand for infrastructure is far exceeds the capacity of our SOEs to be able to deliver on, especially if this is based on their balance sheets. So we are looking at funding and funding options. And then, of course, the capability of the department is critical in all of this, because we're only going to exercise effective oversight if we as a department have the necessary capacity. In the period from which we come, the quality and structure of shareholder oversight has been a big issue. The department has been consistently using the tools that it has shaped over the years to ensure that we keep proper oversight, your shareholder compact, your quarterly reports, and the strategic interactions that the department has through the minister with the chairs and CEOs of the SOEs. So those are the elements of the strategy of the department. In this slide, this is how the department was organized in the period under review. I might just indicate, Chair, that in the current period, with effect from the beginning of this year, we have been reviewing the structure of the department with a view to assessing the extent to which it aligns with the priorities, the extent to which it allows us to do some of the things which I prefer to that we need to do going forward. So when we report for this period, we will be able to share with you just some of the changes that we're introducing. We're not undertaking major restructuring of the department, but tweaking the structure to reposition it in the light of the current priority. This speaks to some of the human resource and people issues. The department is a very small organization. And I'm of the view that for what we really have to do in terms of our mandate of oversight over SOE, we are relatively undercapacitated for the department. It's a matter that has been receiving attention, particularly in the period since I arrived at the department. We've been looking at the establishment, looking at vacancies and addressing some of those vacancies and really giving the structure some attention. It's a structure that in the period when the department went through instability with changes in ministers and so on, the structure of the department I think suffered. And so you will see that even in terms of turnover, resignations and so on, fairly high for a small department, that loss of skills is quite serious and has got serious consequences for the capacity of the department. So we've been looking at this, and you will see that if you compare the number of new appointments in the period under review compared with resignations or exits, on a net basis, we haven't really grown much in terms of capacity. This slide speaks to employment equity issues. I'm not going to spend time on it. We can come back to it if members have any questions in that regard. The next slide, we're indicating where we stand as we speak right now with regard to human resources, and you will see that the total establishment has increased compared to the period that we're looking at, and that we've continued to fill in the vacancies, and that most importantly, the resignations have reduced. We're hoping to continue to stabilize and prevent high turnover. So the challenge is really how do we retain the people that we have, retain them for their skills, retain them for the experience that they have in the department. Again, the vacancy rate is reducing, as well as the general turnover rate. You will also notice that where there's been largest activity is in the highest levels in the department, level 13 and 16, which is really your directors and chief directors. These are high caliber skills that we need. The DPE by its very nature, by the nature of its mandate, really requires high level professional skills. Your economists, your financial analysts, your lawyers. And so on. Some highlights for the period under review. A new minister, deputy minister, was appointed towards the end of the year under review, in November, I think it was, followed by the appointment of the DG in January of this year. We've also, during that time, began to review the vision and mission of the department, with a view to repositioning it. We received an unqualified audit chair, which is what you spoke about. And here I want to say that I'm lucky because I came from a department where, again, for 6 years we had unqualified audit, and so I came into this department with an appreciation of the things that you need to have in place to ensure that you continue to get these positive audits. But the credit must go to the leadership of this department, my predecessor, who have put in place the necessary controls. And so what I've been doing has been to see how we reinforce those controls, how do we plug the gaps, working with the Auditor General, part of the reason for success is an open engagement with the Auditor General, working with the Auditor General to assist us, and most importantly, sensitizing the managers that this is not the accounting officer's exclusive responsibility. It's all our responsibility to ensure that the resources at our disposal are used as efficiently and efficaciously as possible. And I agree with you, Chair. It's something which we will ensure that we sustain. And the Auditor General will tell you that it is the tone at the top. It is what the people seated around you, around here, actually do that ensures that we succeed. If the tone at the top is not right, then the rest of the organization will not behave in ways that are necessary to ensure unqualified audit. Again, I'd like to thank you for your comments in that regard. In the area of energy, very important developments in the period under review are the approvals with regard to the funding of EFCOM field program, the support for the additional 174 billion of government guarantees, bringing them to 350 billion, thereby enabling EFCOM to carry through its massive build program in the years that is underway, and we'll do so for a few years ahead of us. In the area of broadband, Infraco started operating commercially, launching its first offering in November, coming in at 10% below market levels. We're very excited about this. It's still early days for the company, but we are sure that it will make an important impact with regard to the rollout of broadband infrastructure in the economy. Defense, Dinel receiving a rollover of the guarantees to continue to support the company financially. The challenges of Dinel remain. These are some of the initiatives that the department has taken to ensure that we keep the company afloat, particularly with the area of Dinel sub-iron structures, where we develop a framework for resolving some of the challenges in that area. In forestry, again, a challenged company, SAFCO, we've been undertaking consultations with various stakeholders in regard to the future of the company, bearing in mind that we'll be with the land claims, the resolution of the land claims, the nature of the company and the role of SAFCO clearly has changed, and we need to ensure that we enable the company to play the role that it can play, particularly with regard to rural development. So this is ongoing work. In transport, we've had the quite important success in terms of a program the department started a few years ago, looking at how we develop suppliers into the procurements of Transnet and ESCOM, the so-called Competitive Supplier Development Program. And in the period under review, a contract between Transnet and General Electric was signed for the delivery of 100 locomotives, 90 of which will be built will be built in South Africa through that contract and that partnership. In SAA, we saw the Airbus transaction, which saw delivery of the first of the new generation aircraft, the first of which was delivered in February this year. In regard to cross-cutting initiatives, quite focused work has been undertaken on procurement to enable us to leverage, strategically leverage the procurement program of the SOEs going forward. I now want to move to the program highlights, taking each program, starting with the program on administration. Now, here we have this program, which we call Chief Investment and Portfolio Management, which is, seeks to take a holistic view of the SOEs under DPE as assets with regard to how we can leverage them more effectively for the economy. I've spoken about a competitive supply development program, the whole area of skills, how they, their financials in terms of guarantees, and the various performance indicators. All of this are located in a dashboard which enables us to monitor them. This has been work in progress, something under construction, and we will continue to make sure that it works effectively going forward. It's really a monitoring tool. An important area is with regard to assessing the capital structure of these companies with a view to advising how they can continue to be capitalized so that they can deliver on their mandates. That work has been done for TRAFCO, DINEL, ESCOM, Infraco, SAA, and South African Express, and Transnet. This is what we're doing with the Treasury, and it will continue for a while. In planning and monitoring, as required by statutes, we do develop business plans, strategic plans, and we prepare quarterly reports and annual reports, such as the one that we are presenting to Parliament today. So this work is very important from a compliance and oversight point of view and accountability. In the area of broadband, again, the sort of standard oversight activity completed for ESCOM with regard to assessing their annual reports, preparing their shareholder compact and ensuring that the shareholder compact is signed, monitoring the performance on a quarterly and monthly and quarterly basis, and working with them to address the issues around electricity distribution infrastructure, as well as support to municipalities. Infraco, similarly, standard oversight activities completed with regard to assessment of the annual reports, concluding of a shareholder compact, and then monitoring on a monthly and quarterly basis of the performance, as well as monitoring of their investment in the network through the West African cable system. Some of this is ongoing work into the current period. With regard to PBMR, as the committee would be aware, we've been overseeing the implementation of the decision to put the company under care and maintenance, and therefore we have had to secure exemption for the company from reporting obligations under the PFMA in terms of corporate plans, shareholder compact. We're monitoring the process of putting the company on the care and maintenance on a monthly basis with a slightly reduced management and staff complement for the company. In legal and governance, we've been working on developing a government shareholder management model to provide a framework for the legislative imperative of the SOE. We've been focusing on alignment with the New Companies Act, which require that companies reformulate their memoranda of incorporation. And so we're developing a standard template for that purpose. We've also looked at developing a framework for board appointments so that we introduce a bit of systematic approaches and consistent approaches to board appointments, as well as appointments of CEOs. Continuing with governance, the work on reviewing the executive remuneration pretty much concluded in the period under review. However, Cabinet advised the Minister to conduct further, although limited, consultations before the matter is finalized, and we are hoping to finalize this within the next month or so. We recognize that this is a very important issue. We acknowledge its public interest character, and we believe that we should be able to find a balance between all of the issues that are critical with regard to executive remuneration, you know, the issue of moral principles, the need to be realistic, and to recognize the complexity of the issue. We've been working with the Presidential Review Committee, which was launched in the period under review, assisting them with information in their work, and we're hoping that the outcomes of that work will assist us with regard to the mandate of the Department of Oversight and Shareholder Oversight. There's clearly room for consolidation, alignment with regard to how, as a state, we exercise oversight over shareholders. I might add that the executive remuneration matter is also something that the Treasury is looking at, and so what we do hopefully should align with what the Treasury is doing. We've been doing some administrative support for an issue relating to the transfer of telecom shares through what is called the Diabo Share Trust, where we've had to trace beneficiaries of that trust. And that slide indicates success we've achieved in this regard. The matter should wind up fairly soon. We've made good progress in regard to what the department was expected to do in that regard. With regard to Aventura, as it turns out, we haven't quite concluded the winding up of the company. Still some important actions required, but we're pleased that the company has been able to submit audited annual financial statements for the years from 2004 to 2008. We are looking at some of the risks that the winding up process has raised, and we should be able to ensure that we finally put this matter to bed. There's some assets that need to be transferred, the resorts that need to be transferred to some company forever, Sierra Nora. All of that is continuing to receive our attention. The presidential public liaison hotline, this indicates the activity for DPE, 280 calls. Our success rate in responding to those calls is 96.49%. Small number of calls remain open. Generally, the department is highly responsive to this hotline. With regard to manufacturing, it really speaks to the activities of DINEL, indicated that the typical standard oversight activities conducted here, as well with regard to the annual report, shareholder compact, monthly monitoring, as well as work in regard to the delivery for the SNDF. DINEL has continued to be fairly responsive, achieving 85% success rate regarding long-term orders for the defense force. We're looking at the financial sustainability of DINEL, and as I indicated, the three guarantees that DINEL has received from Treasury over the years have been rolled over whilst the company remains in financial difficulties. Ultimately, the future of DINEL will be resolved on the basis of what the country's defense strategy is, and we know that the Department of Defense and the Minister of Defense has been undertaking work which we understand is drawing to a conclusion. We are eagerly awaiting the conclusion of that work, which will give us a framework for resolving the future of DINEL. Whilst that happens, it's really a holding operation with a company facing quite serious challenges, financial challenges. In the area of forestry, again, standard oversight activities conducted there with regard to the annual report, shareholder compact, looking at the board, as well as a turnaround plan for SAFCO. We've asked the board to give us a strategy for how the company will be turned around. And, we've been engaging with that strategy. It will still be what we are doing in this current year. There is work with regard to disposal of minority shareholding in some of the assets. We're working with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform with regard to how these shares will be warehoused for the community, and that work is still ongoing. In transport, again, with regard to Transnet, the standard oversight activities concluded with regard to the annual report, assessment of the annual report, the conclusion of the shareholder compact, and performance monitoring of Transnet on a monthly and quarterly basis. There is work with regard to regularizing the operations of Transnet in the port of Samuha in accordance with the Ports Act. That's work we're doing in the Department of Transport. That work is ongoing. There's also work with regard to branch lines with a view to bringing in private sector operators into the branch lines. Again, this is ongoing work, which we hope will be concluded in the current financial year. With regard to developing some tools for assessing operational performance of Transnet, we have developed National Corridor Performance Management Tool. The first IT portal for that has been completed, and this has been implemented for a number of lines for iron ore, coal, manganese, as well as the Durban, Gauteng, and Durban, South Gauteng, and Cape Town corridors. The work around the financial modeling of the pipeline that has that's been continuing. The department has completed the financial modeling of the tariffs for the pipeline, and we've outlined scenarios for tariff increases going forward. We're monitoring the Transnet capital expenditure program on a monthly basis. With regard to the aviation sector for SAA and SAC, we again have concluded the standard oversight activities with regard to the annual report, shareholder compact, and monthly and quarterly monitoring. We've had to review the activities of South African Express in Congo. The company experienced challenges with its partner there, and we've had to review that. In fact, I think the company has taken a decision to divest from that partnership because of difficulties with regard to resolving differences with their partners there. There's work with regard to SAA Technical, looking at how that business can be repositioned, as well as Voyager. With regard to Program 6, which is called the Joint Project Facility, a number of projects here. One is the project on the renewables, where analysis has been completed with regard to technology, market sensitivity, and funding. The work with regard to procurement has seen the department develop a strategy and business plan for a center of excellence for procurement of locomotives, working with Transnet. Work with regard to buyer requirements, initial information has been received. Work with regard to long-term procurement of locomotives, various studies have been concluded, and this is ongoing work in the current period. We're very pleased with what is emerging here, which will enable us to strategically direct Transnet's fleet procurement over the next several years. A very important program for the department has been on skills and looking at what SOEs are doing for skills development. The department has developed a skills dashboard, which is populated with information on what SOEs are doing with regard to skills. Regular reports are submitted and evaluated. We are looking at activities with regard to trainee artisans, technicians, engineers that are supported by the various programs of SOEs. And we have indicated figures there of what are the learners that are in the pipeline. And of course, we are engaging with different stakeholders in this area, the Department of Higher Education, Department of Economic Development, and various other stakeholders. There's work with regard to solar water heaters that was started in the field under review. We've been working with the Department of Energy, also looking at skills, the dimension of that with regard to the CETA, with regard to the rebate, as well as some of the contracting by ESCOM of trainees. This is also part of the requirements of the World Bank funding agreement that has just recently been signed to ensure that ESCOM moves into the renewables space. We host annually a program for capacity building and learning for the portfolio and select committee. One was held in the field under review in May 2010. And we'll continue to do this as long as there is interest and it proves beneficial to the committee. With regard to property, we've been developing a framework for property disposals for SOEs. This also ties in with the delivery agreement for housing, which calls for SOEs to release unused properties to make them available for housing development. This work is ongoing. The framework has been developed. There's a dashboard that tracks down the property transactions of SOEs, and that will enable us to provide guidance and advice with regard to the most effective ways of disposing of properties. The department also started working with the SOEs with regard to environmental impact assessments. A fund was established. The department monitors the fund on a monthly basis. The issue has become much more important than just EIAs, and so the department is beginning to develop a response to climate change and is part of processes in the run-up to COP17 within a few weeks. So the work on the environment is very important to the department. These are the financials for the period under review. You'll see that in the year before the one under review, that is 2009-10 to 2010-11, saw a massive decrease in the budget of the department. This is on account of the transfers to the SOEs in the year before, which which didn't happen in the last year. There is under expenditure of about 15 million, largely really as a result of compensation of employees. As I indicated, when the department did not have a director general and had just been going through instability at the top, it had it carried a lot of vacancies as people left the department, and so compensation, the budget for employees was experienced under expenditure as a result of that. But for the most, which is the last point on that slide, the department has spent its budget and has conducted its activities and plans as effectively as possible. This is a further detail and breakdown of the budget. I'm not going to spend too much time on that. We can take whatever questions there may be. I want to conclude with just some reflections, and I think, you know, after all is said, I do want to come back to this issue of capacity, which is something that we are paying great attention to. The issue of the policy and regulatory environment is important, and so the work that the Presidential Review Committee on State-Owned Enterprises is conducting is highly important. In fact, we're finding that whilst that work is continuing, we are unable to take certain critical decisions with regard to some of the companies under our portfolio. I've spoken about the coordination with other departments, also that's something which we will be giving attention to. There's a gentleman who introduced himself and said he is chief director for intergovernmental relations. He will help us with just the alignment with some of the key departments that we need. The recession is a matter of concern. We know that some of our companies are much more sensitive to this issue. Transnet, especially SAA. So generally, with recession, you can expect that there will be an impact on the revenues of some of the companies. And so we're watching that space very closely. I suppose I'll leave it there, Chair, and we can take some questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, teacher. I think before we open up for members to interact with the report, can we take a 2-minute break so that you arrange your thoughts or rearrange your thoughts? And Honorable Nana set us down. So we will then continue with that, interacting with the report in 2 minutes. Thank you, teacher, for your report. I think I'll allow members to interact with the report. Now you came in young. What are you going to ask? Honorable Mukwena Dikobo, so concerns Dr. Koranov, Honorable Khololo, Honorable Grayling, and Honorable Van Dijk. Honorable Mukwena, Honorable Nana, you'll be the first and the second round.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I want to associate myself with your complimentary remarks about the leadership of the DG, Mr. Tiriso Matona, and the excellent teamwork from the rest of the departmental functionaries. This is a clear example of the fruit that teamwork can do, especially when you've got a very cool-headed head, so to speak. I know Ms. Matula is very modest to say that he only joined the department now, which is true, I mean, generally, and that credit must go to the people who came before him for the unqualified report. But I mean, we know, obviously, that he comes from a very high-powered department, trade and industry, which he led very excellently. And we appreciate his some of this idea very much for sent. That's an asset. Number one, Chairperson, quickly. The strategic workshop that was held, the summer school, was very, very empowering. And, of course, both as the Transnet and ESCOM, and facilitated very, very ably by Edwin. They did a very remarkable job there. And we benefited as a portfolio committee, parliamentarians deployed here to oversee the performance and vision and direction of state-owned companies. And so that must just go on record, that it must not just be seen as an excursion, but as very, very empowering. I just want to find out, PRC, Mr. Matona, you alluded to the fact that you had an interface with them. What is your sense of where you think things are going? And number two, subsumed in that is, was that a definitive presentation you made to them? And according to your perception, do you think the portfolio committee, it's a kind of a rhetorical question, still has to wait to fix them? Because I think they're almost coming to a close of their tenure. I think they're given 18 months, Chairperson. It's also a double-barred question to ask. Are we expected also to sneak in a presentation there, or we would say, well, the department has done that on our behalf, or the very excellent strategic workshop which you had at Shelly Point has sufficed. I just need to make sure that there's no lacuna there. It's not a petition of consent. All right. And on the performance issue, the PBMR, performance inventory, PBMR, what is the net asset value of PBMR as we speak? And how long do you think the terminative executive management is going to co-care on lasting in order to wind up completely than it, you just get it off the books of government. And they left it 18 months, 3 years, 3 years, 5 years, et cetera, so that the winding off is concluded. And finally, you know, we were disturbed as a portfolio committee when Transnet presented an otherwise excellent report. We cannot remove that from them because it's wonderful. It was almost on par with this one of ESCOM that we received yesterday. It was such a pleasure to do work with people who are so committed, you know. It's almost faultless. And, of course, your report is very, very systematic and very, very thoroughgoing. And the ease in which you presented it is very, very, very wonderful because the report is accessible. But the point is that what disturbed us at some stage was this, as far as the performance monitor is concerned, was this 8 bill event, which was, you bookishly reported in the media here, they didn't foresee it or whatever. However, it was very, very clumsy. And we pointed out to them. We said, we like you guys. You're doing an excellent job, but we can't understand how 8 billion can just not be accounted for. And of course, they did say that there were new management and they're going to ensure that in future that doesn't happen. But you see, just leave the scar that a staggering figure of 8 billion, 8 billion is only 8 billion. Although 8 million would still be too much for these public funds. That just went off like that. When in fact, there are three levels of auditing. They've got an internal audit meeting team. Then they've got an external one. Then there's still the attorney general, the auditor general of the country. And all, this escaped all three monitoring auditing teams. Yeah. So I just thought I might just flag that one. As I say, they did explain the cumulation. They did explain some connards that not. They've stopped all that, it'll never happen again, there were mechanisms in place. So I would just thought, without belaboring the point, this public health did not seem to be just sweeping down on the carpet. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just also congratulations to the department. This is a good report. And the reason why I'm saying it's a good report is that I think all the targets are met. I'm just going to comment on one of the targets where it's not very clear. But they've met their targets. No excuses in the report. Something that those who sit in other committees, getting used to it. Almost every time, long democratic stories why targets cannot be met. I'm trying to understand at least this part on staffing. The DG, according to him, he wished their organogram was bigger, they want more staff, they feel they're understaffed. And I'm reconciling this with the vacancy rate. But somebody can say, well, DG, you wish you could give you more staff, but you can't even fill the ones that you have. And the issue of the shortage of skills, I'm trying to, which specific areas, but also, I mean, listening to what has been said, the loss of talent allow us, if we can find skills locally, we can source skills elsewhere. Have we really done that? Have we really done that? But also related to this, on the issue of staffing, then we have a high turnover rate. Are we not a good employer? Is this department not a good employer, such that people leave at the first available opportunity? What do our exit interviews tell us, assuming that we're conducting them? I think retention, for me, is very important. So I just want to comment on that. But just to be direct on your program, the very first target there, of a fully populated East Buko dashboard. Now, in the achievements, there is a long paragraph that says very little to me. Maybe I'm a bad reader. Because if our target is to fully do something, our report will either say, we have done that, or no, we are at 60%, something like that. Maybe there is something that I'm missing there. That you could help me. Certainly the issue of the partnership, South African Express partnership with Congo. Did I hear very well that we might, SA Express might be pulling out of that and therefore giving that route away? Is that the best thing? I don't know what conditions are, because somebody can just say, no, we found a best partner. But look for another one. Or maybe you are the ones who are called by this not-so-good partner. I just want to understand if I heard correctly. And then the issue of the procurement of locomotives. I'm trying to scratch back because I know that there was a big discussion in this committee last year where two groups told us two different things. And I know at that time, I can't remember the terminology that we used of the standard, you know, the rail that you're talking about, it was the issue of, I can't, standard or narrow and all. Yeah, those things. Now, this things that you are being procured, what gauge is that? Because the understanding was that we might be migrating. So are we still, is this a new one or procuring on the old one? Thanks, Shepard.
Peterson, thank you very much. Let me echo. I find that we allow all members to raise questions. You just take them out. Let me echo, Peterson, the sentiment expressed by the previous speakers that the department is on course. And your SOEs, DG and your team are trying to show face, are busy, are in a business to show face, rebutting the critics that the SOEs as lame duck entities. I think we need to commend you and your team on that one. Yesterday we got a presentation from ESCOM. Everybody, I'm sure if some critics of state-owned enterprises were there, they would have sung the praises as well, which is good. But there are areas that we need to indulge your department on and try to find out how is it trying to resolve some of the challenges. Let me go to human resource area. The skills shortage, you have alluded to that it's a challenge that comes that goes back to the previous financial year. And it seems to be a nemesis that is dogging the good work of the department. What kind of strategies are you employing or are you embarking on to rigorously deal with that kind of element? That is one, or let me say that is 1A. In the in that event, when you are faced with operations that need specialized skill as that you run short of, what are you doing? What is the department doing? The second one is that definitely, because I'm trying to align myself to Honorable Member Dikobo's question, that are we a bad employer? What is our skills retention strategy? I know that is going to go to bonuses and incentives and all that. Why are you allergic to such incentives so that you can retain your scarce and requisite skills that the department is short of? The second one, that was 1A, ABC.
G, that G.
The second one, Chairperson, is the third and the last one. No, that's fine. I was just jumping to one litigation that the department is busy with. I just wanted to find out how far has the department gone with that litigation by Londo Laws or something, what is it, Londoloza Consortium or something. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and again, also from my side, congratulations to the DG on a very neat annual report. I think technically it's not over the top. It's good to look at. It's good. It's easy to go through. And more specifically, I want to congratulate the DG on the report by the accounting officer. For me, any annual report, apart from the financials, is a quality report by the accounting officer. And this report of the accounting officer in the 2011 annual report is a very good report by the DG. So congratulations from our side and to your staff who contributed to put this report together. Very straightforward, the questions. On page 68 and on your slide, you spoke about the remuneration guidelines and report. Yesterday we had a briefing by ESCOM on the remuneration and the explanations on the remuneration of the top management. And it seems to me that the ball is currently in your court, where the DPE has to do further consultations, or in your slide you talk about closed consultations. Can you give us, I think there is an urgent need for this report to be made public and to be finalized. So I'm asking the question to give us a time frame by when do you think this remuneration guidelines will be completed by the DPE before it's submitted, I think, back to Cabinet. And I would assume that this remuneration report will also include recommendations, if you can just confirm that. Secondly, on page 70, there's also a litigation case about Mr. Maroja against ESCOM. Now, that was a huge amount of 85 million rand, and here you state that the Mr. Maroja filed an application for leave to appeal, which was granted on the 18th of March 2011. Can you just update the committee on the latest of this litigation case? You also alluded to the fact that your budget has dropped significantly to 555 million. I just want to find out, and earlier you also mentioned that you are restructuring the department. To drop from 3.9 billion to 555 million, I assume you will restructure the department. If you can just tell us about that. And then we're all too serious. Sometimes it's better also to see the lightest thing, face of things. On page 119 of your report, you recorded a massive amount of fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 4,000 rand. when you look at this 4,000 fruitless and wasteful, then I see it's due to traffic fines for leased cars. Now, normally when I drive with my friends, before we start the journey, we decide the driver pays or we share among the occupants of the vehicle. So can you reveal to us who were the driver or drivers and who were the occupants so that they can share this? That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also thank the DG for the presentation, and also join my colleague on praising you on your annual report, and rate you also maybe by giving you 8 out of 10. The 2 marks, I'm going to take them because of the vacancy rate that I'm not happy with, that you need to fill up. My first question, Chair, will be on the Aventura, the winding up of the Aventura. I just wanted to check with regard to the personnel of that entity, because I know that Aventura had a lot of people working for Aventura. As to what is it that you are going to do about it? Are you going to hand them over to Forever, Sionwaba, or what would be the situation around the personnel of the winding up of Aventura? That was the first one. The second one was on the, what is this? On the vacancy. In that, you know, you, as a department, you've got about 163 staff members in the department. Are they enough to what to call, to do the job for all the nine entities? Because I foresee a situation whereby you are going to be getting one more entity, which is the SOMCO one that is still under discussion, the mining one. Do you think that 163 is going to be enough to carry out all those duties? I just want to get a comment on that one. And then the last one, we're supposed to ask three, right? Yeah, I've got another one here. Yeah, I do have the what about. And then on the vacancies, I said earlier on, I'm not going to give them 10 out of 10. I'm going to give them 8 out of 10. So now, up until they fill up those vacancies. The department actually currently, you require the level 13 to 16, that's professional, within your department, to fill up those vacancies. I'm just trying to check, because if they don't come, what is it that you are planning to do? If they don't come now, and yet you have to fill in those vacancies as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to give you a rating as a department, because I also think it's a very difficult department to rate, and I think that, you know, you occupy a very confusing space within this terrain, which I think sometimes you probably feel too, in that, you know, you have to have oversight over these entities, but you don't have control over them as such. The policy environment gets set by other departments as well. So in terms of what your particular responsibility is, I would define it as, at this stage, until we see what the PRC report comes out with and how this is all going to be realigned, I would say that you need to ensure that we get value for money from our SOEs in terms of achieving our developmental objectives. And in that regard, some of the issues that I would like you to take up, and you know, I didn't have a chance to do it with ESCOM yesterday, but perhaps you could also look at it yourself, is the issue, for instance, with the Duva power station with ESCOM. And I know that a report has been ongoing to look into that, but, I mean, it has been almost a year now. And I would just be interested to hear what has come out of that, because that's taken 600 megawatts off the grid at a very crucial time. And I'd just be interested to hear what the department has done to follow up on those issues. And then also we heard yesterday the problems with the boiler contracts and Hitachi, and what the department is doing in terms of ensuring that Hitachi fulfills its responsibilities around those boiler contracts. We all know the political controversy there, but I really just want to see the department's responsibility being played out there as well. Then, secondly, I'm very interested, and I was very encouraged by the South African Renewables Initiative, and I think it's a wonderful initiative of coming from different departments. We haven't heard too much about it. We haven't got a thorough briefing from it as to what the progress is. And in fact, I was in Germany last about 2 weeks ago, and the Germans, I know, are wanting to be one of the partners on this, but they were expressing reservations to us that they're not seeing movement from our side. And that there seems to be a hold up. What is the hold up at the moment, and can we expect progress on this so that we can really have an announcement at COP17? I think this is a fundamental project that has to go ahead and that we have to really get some movement on. So I'd be interested to hear about that. And then also I think one of your biggest issues going forward, Jamal, is that we really need to look at the future over the next 20 years or so, and particularly around the funding model for SOEs, because we've got huge amounts of funding requirements, both with Transnet and with ESCOM. And it's not just about raising that funding. It's also about how do we pay for that funding, how do we pay that funding back without bankrupting the country and without making ourselves globally uncompetitive. And what we've seen, for instance, in the case of Medupi and Kasile, I mean, one can argue, but we took those decisions at a certain time when the prices were very high. We locked ourselves into a very expensive coal-fired power station, whereas, in fact, if we had to do that today, we could have bought it far cheaper. And so things change very rapidly. And are we looking ahead in the next 20 years to see what kind of changes are going to happen so that we can adjust our kinds of infrastructure board programs to be able to adapt to that? I'm always worried about that concern because we've been proven wrong in the past, and I don't want to see us being caught out again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, in the report, what I fail to see is specific performances of certain public enterprises. Now, let me put it in this way to come to the question. Normally, Parliament took certain decisions or it passed certain resolutions and also adopt certain reports from committees. Now, when Parliament adopts a report from this committee, I am sure that your department is then fully involved and aware of such a report, because the Committee for Public Enterprises, we are linked to the Department for Public Enterprises. So with each and every report that we submit to Parliament, either your department participated in it or in the report itself, and are then aware whether Parliament adopted or rejected. Now, I want to know, after that process has been dealt with in Parliament, is your department then still participating to see that that specific report is then being executed? And in which way do you communicate with your public enterprises to make sure that they adhere to the contents of such a report? And do you see it also fit to come and report back to this committee on the progress being made in the implementation of such reports that was adopted by Parliament? If you can just give us some feedback on the procedures and the administration side, so that we just want to make sure that once Parliament passed something, it is not filed, but it is being implemented. Thank you.
Honourable Funday, the DG would like you to just be specific on this report, I think.
Chairperson, this is in general, because that's why I say, can you tell us about the administration and the procedures? You know, I don't want to refer to specific reports. You should be aware of all the reports that we've been adopted, so you can refer to all of them if you wish. Thank you.
Honourable Nana, do you have any comment? Not. Okay. Thank you. Just the last one. There's on the report of the Auditor General, there was some investigation about misappropriation of funds by an employee. And this has been investigated and so on. So if you can just at page 81, you'll see there other reports and then investigation. Number 14. Yeah, you can just add that as a last. That's right.
Thank you, members. I'm going to rely on the report of my team.
to deal with some of these questions, so let me just take those that I can take, and then I'll allocate the others. Honorable Mukwena asked a question about the PRC in terms of what the sense of direction is there. Well, if the PRC concludes its work according to schedule, we as a department will be very happy. The SOEs as a whole will be happy. The country as a whole will be happy. Because this is such an important responsibility that the committee has. However, chair and members, it is uncertain that they will conclude their work on time. And I think that the main challenge in that regard is just the complexity of the exercise that they've undertaken. Because they're looking at everything. They're looking at the governance. They're looking at the structures. They're looking at the financing. They're looking at performance. So the scope of the investigation is far too large, I think, you know, for the commission to be able to conclude in time. So our sense is that they will require a lot more time. And one hopes that as they do so, they privatize a bit. Because there are certain matters that we could benefit from if we had, you know, the recommendations and decisions on in the immediate term, so to speak. I can give you an example. We're not leveraging on state assets in the telecommunications sector because you have a Department of Communication responsible for certain things, CENTEC, DPE, Broadband Infraco, the State Information and Technology Agency, CETA, has got certain assets. The Defense Force has got certain assets. I just recently learned that there are several more departments and public entities. SANRAL, as they build the roads, the highways, they're putting fiber optic. So you have fiber optic assets that are scattered throughout structures of the state that we're not necessarily leveraging on. Now, of course, fortunately, we are having a conversation with DOC and we're aligning and, in fact, encouraging the companies, Zentech and Infraco, Broadband Infraco, to cooperate, and they're doing so quite productively. And it's clear that if that is that cooperation matures, it will automatically result in a merger of the two entities at some further point down the line, as we speak. But there's much more that's required, I think, for a full consolidation of that sector from a public or state point of view. And there's no doubt that the state will still need to play a role here. Particularly with regard to the connection of rural, underserved, underdeveloped areas of our country, where the commercial private sector doesn't go today. They don't connect people where they don't see revenues and profits. So the state still has a role to play in this sector. There's no doubt about that. I give you that as an example. That there are several others where we could benefit from quick, early decisions, or at least advice. So one hopes that as they review their work and reposition as to how they go forward, you know, they will prioritize and maybe phase in this review and restructuring of state-owned enterprises. We engage with them because they look at what we do, and they look at what we do from one perspective, which is we are the only department that has as our exclusive mandate shareholder oversight, and that shareholder oversight mandate speaks directly to the issue of value for money. Shareholder, that's all the shareholder does. You want value for money. Okay. Others have that and combined with policy roles, regulatory roles, and so on. And often that clouds exactly what they are supposed to deliver by way of outcomes. Many other departments, you know, that have state-owned companies, which are also commercial enterprises. If you think about Department of Transport with AXA and TRASA, those are commercial operations, you know, by and large. So the PRC looked at this and wants to benchmark, you know, wants the benchmark to say, if the state is going to look after commercial enterprises, this is how it must do it. It must do it the way TPE does it. So the way TPE does it is what we benchmark with what the world does. So we look at all the countries in the world that have got SOE. We participate in forums of countries that have SOEs, and we share experiences with them. We try to do this according to best practice. So I expect that in their recommendations with regard to what you do with commercial enterprises, cut through government, we say, you know, adopt them the TPE model, which itself, by the way, still has to mature. But there's no doubt that we are in the right direction and we're doing the things that ought to be done. If as a shareholder, the state has to extract value for money. Now, of course, this is not value for money in the classical private sector role, because state-owned enterprises have a public mandate, which is not purely commercial. Anyway, so those are the issues which we know the PRC is dealing with. We hope that they conclude as quickly as possible, but I know that they are there. Just the scope and complexity of the task is going to challenge them. Now, I don't know the chair about their interface with the committee. I expect that even if they were to issue a report tomorrow, it'll attract so much debate that inevitably that debate will have to come here too. We will debate it in government. It will be debated publicly if it's issued. Remember that report will be in the first instance the president's report. So when the president makes it available, within government, within the cabinet, it will be debated there. And you can well imagine the sort of intensity and complexity of the debates, because those will be largely a restructuring, recommendations about the restructuring of the state in many ways. and they will obviously be matters of great interest to many stakeholders as such. But I'm sure that at the right time, you know, the committee is free itself, I think, to invite the PLC to come here. I think they will recognize the important role that such a committee as yours will play on a matter like this. Chris Hawley, the Deputy Chief for Energy, will deal with the asset value of PPMR and about the transitional arrangements with regard to management. Now, the 8 billion irregular expenditure is a matter of great concern to us, the shareholder, as well. We have made it clear to Transnet that this sort of thing is unacceptable. There can never be any excuse for management and accountability failing of such a scale. And so it is a matter that we will be working very closely with them on to ensure that it doesn't recur. Part of that is the shareholder prerogative with regard to the auditing, the audit function. Now, the norm with audits, as according in fact to the Auditor General, is rotation. Some of the auditors in the SOEs have been there forever. And it's when they are there forever and get too cozy with the company that things like this slip. And so I think just about everywhere we have asked for auditors to be rotated in accordance with the norm, good governance, which is also, by the way, something King III promotes, that auditors must be rotated. So we can see the importance of the issue. The issue around vacancies and staff or human resources more generally is a difficult one. Because in many ways, the mandate of the department in the way that I have outlined it, which is shareholder oversight, is a specialized mandate. It's unique also in regard to what are the skills and technical requirements for such a mandate. And so the department has found that trying to execute that mandate within the normal structures of public service and remuneration structures of the public service is highly, highly challenging. Because you can do a market benchmark. What does a financial analyst, how much does a financial analyst cost in the market? There are typically people who are employed by banks, and they earn quite well in the banks. So they're not going to rush out of the banks into public service. What do you do to make it a lot more attractive? Sure, many of us who work in public service know the fulfillment, the empowerment, and just the scope of learning that you get in public service, and just the satisfaction of serving your people, serving your country, which we hope many young people out there should also be motivated, similarly motivated. But it's not clear whether they are. In the 17 years or so of our democracy, many of us started with that sort of enthusiasm, but we have not reproduced on a large scale public spirited professionals who are motivated by more than just remuneration. So we face the harsh realities of the market. The same thing is going to feature in the remuneration thing, framework for what you call it, for executives and boards. When we come to it, when we deal with it, when it's out there. So it's a problem. And so what the department has done, they have had introduced new categories and so on. You know, incentives to incentivize and so on, to try and just lift the financial incentives out of the straitjacket of public service. But you can't do that on a large scale before you start falling foul of the rules of public service. So it's a It's a real challenge. The department spent some time thinking of a new form, new organizational form for itself when it was doing the shareholder management governance, shareholder management model act. So they were going to benchmark themselves against the French model. The French model is the DPE there looks after 68 companies. It's a small organization of 70, but it's a high caliber, best of the breed in the French context. So when you are in the private sector, your aspirations, career aspirations, is to go and work for this agency. So they attract the best, and then of course they also use consultants and so on. So the department was formulating something like that, but when the legislation didn't pass, that fell through, and so we're back to really having to do this function with a government department in the traditional sense of the word. So it's a challenge. We put out an ad and see who responds. It's completely inappropriate skills that respond. We have just had unsuccessful interviews last week looking for somebody to look after some of our SOEs. It'll be teachers, sometimes general lawyers. What are your qualifications? No, we can direct you to the department that you should apply to for that skill. One of the things we're, at least as an intervention, we have tried to say, well, let's capacitate our HR function. Because really what you have there is one director. And the function so far is very non-strategic, highly administrative. So you put out an ad, people apply, you shortlist, and you arrange interviews. So we say, no. We must begin to think about the value chain. What is the value chain? So let's go to universities. Let's link up with universities. Now, of course, the department has got a graduate master's thing, which is in fact actually working well. It's limited. We get a number of every year a number of graduates coming in, not too many. So that enables us to have a throughput, hopefully, from which we can grow our own trees. Because a lot of this is going to actually develop these people within government, but you need to ensure that you have a consistent throughput into the department. So you need a number of innovations, which I think if we apply ourselves properly, we can begin to make a difference. The challenge also is that as a small department with limited resources, as you can see, having to look after large enterprises that are highly resourced, and in the end, what they do, they poach the people. So suddenly, the people who are on this side doing a critical analysis of an SOE pop up on the other side. Now, there should be some protocol which we may have to actually write to say, please, you know, before you, you know, let's talk and so on. And of course, some of them have told me to say, you know, we don't want to approach from you, but some of your people are approaching us for jobs. We are interested, and so we need somebody, we're interested in such a person in your department. And then we can manage it that way. But there's nothing that says, you know, they should approach me. If somebody approaches them, you know, or when they're interested in somebody, because, you know, there is a market that operates there, you know. Now, I think we can also, under normal, properly defined circumstances, also get secondments from the SOEs in particular areas where they can help, where we're plugging in the gaps. We need to think about this. So I think it's an issue, in short, that really requires careful strategic thinking within the department. And so we, in reviewing the structure going forward, we are capacitating that function, the HR function, elevating it. You know, we need somebody senior with a vision and with an experience with the human resource capacity issues. You will find that the vacancies will exist, notwithstanding the skills requirement, simply because there's a mismatch. The vacancies, the majority of them will tend to be at a low level, support administrative sort of functions, whereas we need hard technical skills. So part of what we've been doing in a constrained environment has been to combine these vacancies, or the budget at least. So we close some of them, we take the budget, so we can use the budget to attract high level skills. We are having to do that also because the treasury, the posture of the treasury, in the current, at least this financial year, but that will be the posture for a long time, is one of saying there's no money. So try and leave within your allocations, your current allocations. We have just gone through a budgeting process right now, and we've been told very clearly by Treasury that it's fine, you can make bids, but there's no money, there's no new money. So we're engaging with the Treasury to say, well, sure, but, you know, look at our situation, which has got special circumstances. The Treasury has an interest in a well-capacitated public enterprises, because these are state assets which sit on the books of the Treasury. You know, all of these companies are assets and liabilities. OK? Okay, so we are in fact managing these assets and liabilities in another sense, so also for the Treasury, on behalf of the Treasury. So so we're hoping, you know, that they will meet us halfway in regard to our skills requirements. Retention is important, yes. So part of strategic HR management is also to work at retention. And the sort of retention requires not just financial incentives, which the department now actually uses financial incentives for retention. But you also need to give people a sense of what the career path could be. That typically the career path of a DPE employee is you could end up being a CEO of one of the companies. How about that? And in many countries, actually, that's what happens. The CEOs and management executives of these companies are former public, what you call it. Because actually what you need people who are public officials. Because these are not just jobs. They're a vocation that you have to go into with sense of purpose, public purpose, as it were. So we need opportunities, but we need creative thinking. Because otherwise, what happens is the sort of thing people jump. They jump ship, and they get poached. Or the companies recruit people in the open market who don't necessarily, you know, come with a sense of what these companies fundamentally are about. They're about the public interest. They're about the development of the country at the end of the day, and dealing with issues of poverty and employment. Anthony, you'll speak to the Isibugo. Rafita, you'll talk to Congo Express and the issue there, and the issue of what stage. Matthias, you'll deal with the Londoloza and all of the litigation matters, you know, the Maroha one as well. I can just, on the remuneration review, just indicate that we set ourselves the month of November to be the target date to conclude this and to begin to go out. As I indicated in my input, the Treasury are doing work themselves, by the way, in this area, and we are finding that our views as a department, the report, which was an independent report, and what the Treasury is doing, are not aligning. So and that brings a lot of complexity and challenge about the issue. And perhaps I can give you a feel. You know, the Treasury just basically wants to make everybody civil servant, governed as contemplated in the Public Service Act, in how remuneration of executives of the SOEs. That's another extreme, in our view. So the one extreme is that these salaries, packages, are determined as if these are private companies, governed by market forces and the profit motives and so on. So the formula takes account of the asset base, turnover, and all kinds of things. In some cases, there are phantom shares, so the remuneration is based on phantom shares. So you have all kinds of things to take into account in arriving at what is a good balance. So there are all kinds of extremes. So we need something that kind of comes to the center and balances things out. That's a complexity. So as we conclude the work, we are consulting with the Treasury, we are consulting with other departments and so on. So a whole range of views which hopefully will input into what is the final set of proposals. And of course, you can expect that there is going to be additional public debate on the issue. There are risks, and we are tested as a department about what our appetite for those risks are. And the risks, with the 2 years now, the salaries and the emolument, the remuneration has remained unchanged by and large. But you can only freeze. You can only freeze the salaries of executives for only so long before you start confronting the danger of loss of those skills. So I'm hoping that we won't push the issue any further. But what is comforting is that the CEOs and executives and board members understand that this is an important issue, that it has a big public interest, and they are happy to allow us all the time to arrive at hopefully what will be a sensible arrangement for the country. Chris, will you deal with the Duva and the boiler contract issues? Edwin, will you deal with the renewables? Now, I'll deal with the last two questions, and then I'll hand over to my team. With regard to Honourable Van Dalen's question, question. No, we as a department are required, and it's not a matter of choice, that when Parliament adopt a report that makes certain recommendations, that we have to act on those recommendations. And I'm not aware of any report that has made recommendations which the department has not acted upon. So the last one in particular, the last report of this committee, as far as I know, we have been seized with that matter, in as much as we are still seized with it. We have succeeded to push it in the right direction. And so the company concerned is dealing with the matter, has taken decisions which have been endorsed by or ratified by the board. The minister has spoken directly to the board about this issue. So in our view, the matter is at hand. In as far as the last report that I'm aware of that has come from Parliament that requires the department to act, I'm not aware of any other that may be there, but the last one we are working on it. It's work in progress, and the progress is quite good in our view. So unless there are indications that something is amiss, we shall leave the processes that are underway to run their course. Because we think that the matter is getting the right attention as such. I see Chairperson, just a follow-up on Terrace. Can you just say to which is the last one that you referred to, please, Jim?
Not referring to any specific, unless you want any specific.
It talks about the company. I mean, we have the right to know what company is talking about.
Okay.
You can just say what is the last one that is making progress, so we are aware of the last program. I was asking general, but he referred to a specific company, and I think we have the right to know what he's talking about.
No, I could be general. I could be general because DPE, we deal with companies. Our work is about companies. So I thought you will help me and give me specifically. But you didn't. So perhaps you and I can talk.
Chairperson, the point of order. We ask a question. We are here to ask questions. It's for the department to answer our questions. And if you refer to a certain report, to say in general we are dealing with a report, otherwise the DG is referring to another report. All I'm asking is if it says the last report, are making progress in the company, just mention which report applicable to which company. That's all I'm asking. I don't want to discuss another discussion outside the committee. It's the committee time now. That's my request, please.
I hope that's not going to get us into other questions and we get into another discussion on whichever company or report that the DG is referring to. So I think if there isn't any specific report that the department has not paid attention to, which was referred to the department, and that should be brought to the attention of the department, and the department must then be given the opportunity to respond to it. I think let's leave it at that. You may proceed, please.
So the second issue was in relation to the misappropriation of funds, and of course, Chair, I don't have any further information other than what's reflected, which is that when we found out about the misconduct, we took disciplinary action, which resulted in the employee being dismissed, and we are now taking measures to recover the funds. That is the state of play. And I think when as we are empowered to do so, we recover the loss to the state, it should be the end of the matter, unless the misconduct is of such a nature that it needs to be handed over to the police. I'm not sure whether that is the case, but my colleague Shireen, you'll assist me. I don't know whether the matter was handed over to the police.
Thank you, DG. The matter wasn't handed over to the police because it was under the amount of 100,000. So it remains within the department, and we have to deal with it effectively and report to the Auditor General.
That is that. Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna, the questions are self-selecting. So I don't know. Chris, you can start, and other colleagues can come in. Thanks.
Thanks, DG. If I could address the Honourable McQueen's question around PBMR. If you look at net asset value, we didn't obviously submit an annual report, et cetera, due to cost savings to this year, but they have done the financials. And in terms of technically net asset value, it's zero because they've written down all of the plant and equipment, et cetera. But we do have a disposal or retention schedule of assets that are there that don't have book value. Now, if you were to just sell it, all of that stuff as scrapped, et cetera, you're probably talking a few million rand. Like maybe 16 million or something that you could recover. That's not to talk about the IP, et cetera, which doesn't have commercial value, but it does have intellectual value. And they haven't been able to put a price on that because you can't sell it at the moment. What they do have is they've got, and I've got the figure here, as of the 7th of October, they have 169 million rand in the bank. There's no money that's been given to them in addition, and we had said that they have to close. There was a 20 million rand allocation that was given to them for the closure of the fuel development laboratory, which is a nuclear facility. So it's a statutory requirement. And they've made provision for 16 total. So we gave them 20 and then 40. So 60 of this 169 is actually kept aside to be able to decommission these fuel laboratories. It hasn't been decommissioned yet because there could be some use by Nexa for it. So it's no use just spending this money and closing the whole thing if they could use it. What we are saying in terms of the projections for going into care and maintenance, we had said it would be a two-year period to the end of 2013, and they had enough money to survive, and things have actually gone a bit better than expected. And we're predicting that at the end of those 2 years, they'll actually still have about 50 million of this money in the bank. We have completed the reduction. There's only 9 staff members in TVMR at the moment. They've moved out of the building they were in, and they're renting a building currently with a lease up to the end of March 2013. The big issues were their computers, because they've got some supercomputers, I believe, the fastest computers in the Southern Hemisphere and all that kind of stuff, which they've had to house in special facilities, and Eskom is helping with that. Because technically, PVMR is still a subsidiary of Eskom Enterprises, and so there's a governance arrangement there. The big issue for us in terms of closing this is to sort out the agreement with the other shareholders around the corporation, and there is some headway there. I think all the parties do agree that we need to just put this into a holding pattern, see where we go. But I think all the parties that are invested would want first right of refusal should the project be resurrected. And, you know, So as soon as that's concluded, we should be able to sort that out. Executive management, there shouldn't really be a need. The current acting CEO is appointed up to the end of this month by Eskom, as well as the current board that's in place. And we have to make a decision. I think the AGM is in November, if I'm not mistaken, which we don't run. Eskom runs that because it's a subsidiary, where the intention is then to downsize. And just so what is appropriate now? What is the statutory requirement in terms of a subsidiary of Eskom to make it legal? And that's where we are. So we progressed quite significantly. Most of the IP is packaged, but there's like 6,000 CDs, and there's like a room of documents. And there's a lot of good stuff there. And we're talking to some of the universities about possibly also being able to utilize some of this from, you know, to further the intellectual side of things. If I may, did you just cover the other ones quickly around... in terms of the Dhuva power station issue, it was also addressed in Eskom's, the Honourable Freyling, in Eskom's quarterly system briefing, is that the investigation is currently underway, and they have to finalise the discussions with the insurers before they can release the report. Now, that said, for us, you know, Dhuva is an important thing, but it's a greater issue for us, is that we have an engagement that from when the Dhuva thing happened, etc., and we're still keeping an eye on that, is to engage with Eskom. They talk about the maintenance backlog, and to engage with them on the state of the turbines, the generators, etc. One of the things we've picked up is that from the Dhuva incident, they've already learned some lessons, because there was a certain vibration that happened on that unit that they picked up that they would not have taken notice of before. And there was another unit, apparently, that had just had an inspection of, I think it was a month or so or two ago, and they put it back into service, and they picked up the same vibration, and they stopped it, and something had broken inside. And if they hadn't picked it up, they might have then had a bigger incident. So they've learned some lessons, but what we're doing with them now is we're going through an assessment of all of the turbines and generators in these coal-fired power stations to determine the state, what is the nature of, if there's an inspection backlog on certain of them, to try and get an idea of what is the state of these equipment. And then what is the need to now create additional space for catching up on this backlog? Because a lot of it is inspection. So we'll get the full report as soon as they're done with the insurers. But we do know that they're well on the way to actually securing the equipment already for replacement. I believe they're about to put something on the ship very soon, if not already today, to be here. The issue around, and it's around the bill, and we're talking about Madupia and the possible... issues on the critical path of the boiler. We have a working group with Eskom. We engage with them on actually it's every second week at the moment, just to look at issues with the various boilers. And it's not only Madupi, because there's Ingula and there's Kusile. So you have to look, and the return to service stations, which are being completed now, and they've had some issues there too. So what we do is we've had a look, and we've actually gone out to site with them. We've done some of the visits with Hitachi. And we're not involved in their project management and et cetera, but we are monitoring what they're doing. And so far, we've been quite satisfied with the engagement. It's been very robust. And there's been a lot of encouraging stuff coming from the suppliers themselves to try and get it done. Because they also wouldn't like to have this, that they've messed up this huge project. I mean, it is one of the biggest projects around at the moment. So until we get the final assessment, and then I think you also have to look at that, and I know it just came from yesterday too, but you do have to look at that in the light of what is required from a country capacity perspective in terms of IRP, which actually says that the Medupi power starts being delivered in 2013, whereas Eskom had tried to schedule it for 2012. So they wanted to bring it in sooner than was really, I suppose the IRP says, well, that's kind of the last when you need it. And they tried to bring it, and maybe it has to shift a little bit. We're not sure yet. But until we know, we can't make any speculation around that. The other one I just want to address quickly is about the funding model. We talk about raising the funding and how to pay that back. But it's also the question that was raised yesterday around private sector participation. And the department itself is busy putting together a framework for that for the SOCs. But it's going to be a big question going forward in terms of how, not just IPPs in the power sector anyway, but how do they participate even if Eskom were the operator? Because, just not even just unlocking funding from a balance sheet perspective, it's on what basis do you bring a private sector person in? Would we want a private operator operating all of our power plants? And how many of them, and what role? And so that's going to be a big issue going forward. This issue around that we got locked into higher prices with Medupi Kusile, we know at the time that we placed those orders, the world was building power stations like you won't believe, and you couldn't get people to even bid. I do think going forward, the timing of the allocation of the IRP capacity blocks and how those are then procured is going to be the big issue. And very carefully being able to monitor the growth in demand. Because if you see it's not materializing at the rate you had intended, then you have to phase out your build. But it's a very fine line, because stations can't be put up in a six-month period or so. Maybe some of the wind, I know that Honorable Kraling is a big renewables, but in terms of the types of stations we need, some of that. And yes, you can do shorter period build, but more expensive running costs, and so there's big trade-offs.
Okay. If I may, DG, address the questions on Transnet or transport-related questions. Starting off with the SA Express one, pulling out of the TRC. I think probably the way the slide is drafted is misleading, in that SA Express is still operating into the TRC. They're actually operating into Lubumbashi, and SAA operates into Kinshasa. So the whole thing about the JV in the TRC was essentially that SA Express wanted to move traffic domestically within the TRC, so between Lubumbashi and Kinshasa. So for them to do that, they needed to, it's generally the rules in the aviation industry. You needed to be to have a partner who had majority in the partnership, and that's where the JV issues came in. So unfortunately, the partnership did not work out, and primarily I think the lessons learned from that experience is relating to the due diligence before entering into such a partnership, some of the governance issues that need to be sorted out. And another issue, which is not a small issue, it's a language issue, the translation of the contracts, between English, French, and that, and making sure that you really do understand what that they the same translation between the different languages. Yeah. So those were some of the challenges. So essentially, it's not giving away the route, and correctly so, it's a very attractive market, and there is potential. But there's lessons learned from that which SEA Express has taken to heart, and we've asked them to come back to us on what is the possibility if they were to go in and assess the business case again, how would they do it differently? But the operations into the DRC are not lost. Okay, the second question was on the gauge, the procurement of locos, whether it's on the new or current gauge. It's on the current gauge. And let's remember that Transnet is really procuring the locomotives that that they're procuring now to sustain existing operations on the existing network. And I'm sure Transnet in their presentations to the Portfolio Committee have dealt with the issue of the gauge and the costs associated with changing the gauge from Cape gauge to standard gauge. There are benefits on both sides, but at this stage, what we need to do is to keep the trains moving on the current network. The Department of Transport is in the process of developing a rail policy which will also deal with some of these issues relating to the gauge and the a shared network, if possible, between freight and passenger, which would then be an opportunity to explore the gauge issue again. Thanks.
I think I'll just touch on a
Sorry, Chair. I just I beg your indulgence. I remember that the last time we came here, Ms. Raisibe Lipula was acting. She has now been confirmed in her position. She is now TDG, and I think Ms. Majid Mkhono was also acting. She has also now been confirmed in her position. We are in the process of filling the other senior vacancies. I wanted to just bring your attention to that. She's not acting anymore.
I think it's only in order to congratulate both of them on their permanent appointment and to wish you well in your new positions.
I'd just like to touch on a couple of points. I think I'll just start with the issue around the funding model, which is a very, very valid issue. And my colleague did touch on it. Essentially, and traditionally, you know, when evaluating financing, you know, there will be typical characteristics that you look at, you know, the relative cost of capital, the flexibility of the payments, and the, you know, covenants that go with that. But also you then need to start looking at, you know, the implications of that, the balance sheet implications, the income statement implications, and cash flows, you know. Other issues would be, you know, strategic flexibility. And in the main, I think the main thrust of, you know, the SOE in terms of financing most of their new investments has been around this traditional method. But I think the question that the Honorable Member raises now, you know, it's very valid in that we find ourselves in a situation where based on the current balance sheets, I think the size of the infrastructure investment that is required, you know, to unlock growth in this country is pretty massive, and we cannot then just restrict ourselves to, you know, to the balance sheet approach. So in that regard, there has been something in thinking within the department, with that, a new unit to be called Strategic Partnerships has been established, basically seeking to unlock some future funding, you know, by creating strategic partnerships with key customers, with the financial institutions, basically aimed at addressing and leveraging, you know, those other sources of funding to enable, you know, bigger investment into the SOCs. So that's the main thrust of you know, our efforts in this regard. And the office of the CIPM is moving, being converted to strategic partnerships, basically aimed at looking at more innovative ways of seeking this new funding to enable this this greater, bigger than balance sheet approach to finding investment finance for the SOCs. The other question I'd like to address is around the Isibuko dashboard. Yes, in terms of the achievements that have been listed there, those were the achievements for 2010-11. I'd just like to remind the members that the Isibuko dashboard has been under development for a couple of years, and basically we're trying to develop this into a very, very effective monitoring tool, such that we are able to have a broad range of KPIs and a line of sight into what exactly is happening in all the SOE is. And in that regard, we'll look at the financial, we'll look at the operational efficiencies, risk issues. So, and but overall, as we go along, and as we continue fine-tuning our oversight role, we find that there are the KPIs that we need to include into this dashboard to be effective and to have a much clearer line of sight of what is happening. We have seen issues around skills in the recent past. You know, they've come to the fore, and we need to really be sure that what the SOCs are saying around skills development, they can actually deliver upon, and we have a tool to measure their progression around that. Another issue that we need to have a greater line of sight into is transformation, and this needs to be we need to drill down into the main elements of what constitutes transformation to be able to actually report back that we are actually progressing on those. So in every year we then set ourselves target of what areas of the dashboard will be enhanced, and this is where I think the word is more around the enhancement. We have the framework, the system is working. So it's about enhancing and building upon what we already have, and that is why the report is structured in this way. These were the areas that needed to be enhanced for the year, and they have been enhanced. For this current year that we're in, we've also set a number of areas that we need to beef up, and we'll be reporting against those. But it's aimed at enhancing our oversight capability into the SOCs.
I think it's useful to give you a sense of the initiatives we're taking holistically regarding the climate change challenge. So, and this is part of your COP17 concern. So the one thing we're doing is we've got a draft policy now to guide SOC on how they go about developing their internal policies and practices relating to climate change. But I think fundamentally what it means is that it will now be an agenda on every single SOC's kind of management checklist, as something that they need to have a formal policy and practice around. What we've also commissioned a piece of work looking at what global state shareholder managers are doing in terms of engaging with climate change, and are convening a closed workshop at COP17 with some of the BRIC countries and potentially some African counterparts to explore how shareholder managers are engaging with the challenge. And finally, in terms of the renewable initiative, Minister Davies is taking a CAB memo either, I think, today, that a signing process with UK, Norway and Germany is completed at the COP17 for a kind of partnership agreement. Probably the biggest, we've got incredibly high levels of cooperation from energy and DTI. Probably the biggest hurdle at this stage is Treasury. So but it is moving along very, very well. And of course, as you know, the Eskom loan from African Development Bank for its renewables has come through, was signed a few weeks ago.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chair. I'll talk to this two litigation matters, as well as the question on Aventura. The first litigation is that one of Londoloza Papu. I think this is one matter. Londoloza Papu is a consortium that was made when they attempted to acquire the Safcol, an Indian consortium and the local company. The matter has been outstanding for quite some time, but it is strategically done in by the department. That is the position that we've taken, that we've defended the matter, but we won't pursue it, given the fact that we are the respondents. Londoloza has failed to amend its own papers, so we are just waiting, and obviously we will take a view and exercise our rights in terms of the prescription legislation at the time. Then the second issue is that one of the former Eskom chair. This matter has been set down for, the appeal is set down for the 31st of October. Given the fact that the first court awarded in favor of the department and Eskom, when we lodged our papers for the to defend the appeal, we did request that the former C provide the department and Eskom security costs for in case he's unsuccessful with his appeal. Then the issue around Aventura. Aventura currently does not have permanent employees. The residual people who are at the company is the CEO and his assistant, and we also have a company secretary, but it's an outsourced function just to maintain the legal process. So those are the only three people in the company, and they are just really dealing with the whole winding up process, and they are working closely with the department.
Of interest, Chairperson, that this Londoloza has not submitted its amended particulars. Any costs incurred from the department side?
The cost will be really the cost for the attorneys and senior counsel to defend the matter. But the matter has not been set down as yet. So for now, there are no costs. And hence we decided that we won't pursue it, because if we pursue, then we will obviously be liable for cost. So that's the reason for not pursuing it.
The response by the DG, there's one aspect that he has not touched, the possibility of looking for skills elsewhere. Because in my view, it may also result in skills transfer. You get those skills from elsewhere, and while these people are here, they also assist in imparting those skills. I guess the other one, maybe by implication, I should read because I was looking at the issue of exit interviews. In other words, what are the main reasons? I seem to be hearing that some that can be helped. I mean, if you lose a chief director because this person is going to be DDG elsewhere,
you know, you should actually be priding yourself that you are producing, you know, you're also assisting. I haven't heard that, but it looks like maybe you can just confirm that we don't have people who live in two, because our DG, I'm going to be DG elsewhere. I'm leaving our chief director, I'm going to be chief director somewhere. So something can also, it can only be that I want to be chief director, but this is not the best place to be.
Let me just answer for myself. No, you see, the issue is far more complex than we can exhaust it. So I was just giving you some of the key aspects of it that I have seen, that I know are real and pose challenges. So when you say skills from somewhere else, I'm not sure what you actually mean, because it's our work is not the compared to, say, you know, the actual built program of a Transnet or ESCOM, where some of the skills that you require, you actually have to import, you know, like the welders that had to be imported because they do specialized welding and that skill is not available in the country. Our work is not one where you could import the skills from outside of the country. We have to draw the skills in the market, in the South African market. And the point I'm making about the challenge is that it's a market in which we compete with the private sector. And we compete with other departments too. But, I'm sure Shireen will confirm, most of the people that leave DPE leave for the private sector, as opposed to leave for other government departments. They leave for the private sector or the SOEs themselves. And so I think that's a challenge. So the challenge is we've got to put ourselves in a position where we are attractive to potential recruits in the private sector. But of course in the public sector, we get a fair amount of people applying for DPE jobs from other government departments. The other thing is the department, and I'm happy the communicators are here, the department hasn't been good at profiling itself in terms of what is the work of this department to potential young people that might want to join or are interested in serving in public service. But the work is very exciting. You know, it's a good department to work for. But the DPE doesn't promote themselves in the way a treasury does. Because in fact the work of DPE is on the same level as the work of treasury. You know, treasury has got a certain profile in the marketplace. So we got to deal with that. We also have to deal with the fact that these skills are in short supply. You know, financial analysts, economists, electrical engineers, such as Chris. These are not in abundance. People in abundance, and that's another problem. It's a problem for our country that we're not churning enough skills. But we've got to align with the universities. We've got to develop a value chain and work on this issue in terms of a value chain, a strategy that deals with the value chain. You know, people in the universities, we take them in tents. All of those elements, some of them are there, but we need to pick them up and capacitate them a lot more strongly. The exit interviews, I don't know. My sense is that at least over the last 2 years, the turnover at DPE has had to do with the instability, leadership instability. You know, this is a department that had 4 ministers in 2 years. Okay. And three acting DGs before I came there. In that time, no major decision taken about the structure. You know. So when people don't feel they know where the organization is going, they'll leave. So I think it seems to me, there may be other factors, and again, okay, the issue is complex, but it seems to me that those are the factors that account for turnover. Now the stability, and you've seen the resignations in the last 10 months have reduced. The turnover has reduced because there's stability, there's direction, there's leadership in the department. And I think DPE is re-experiencing its excitement once more. The people sitting around here refer to days when it was really nice at DPE, really exciting, dynamic environment. I'm hoping that we are able to rediscover that as we work on these very complex challenges. So we will stay close to yourself so you understand how we are going about this. And we may come to discuss all this issue in the committee. We are discussing this issue amongst other things, and we can prepare properly for it. We can do proper analysis of what are the issues and that type of thing, so we can have a much more informed discussion. The budget, I didn't deal with the question of the budget that Honorable Goranov had asked. No, what accounts for a massive decline is that in the previous year, there were transfers, massive transfers. I think they're in the financials, to the SOEs. So when those drop, the budget is really for compensation of employees, which is probably the largest item, expenditure item. For the rest, it's operations. And we're not department, because, you know, the outputs of the department are intellectual knowledge. So you won't see, you know, big amounts, you know, in each program. You know, it's fairly modest, unless we use consultants. And by the way, I want to talk about consultants. We are careful not to have over-dependence on consultants, which is what happens sometimes when departments are undercapacitated. They over-depend on consultants. So we don't want to do that. But at the same time, the nature of the work that we do is one where we can benefit from using consultants in very selected strategic areas where we can use consultants. And we do that as part of our capacity requirements and resourcing requirements as such. And I think I'll leave it there. The fruitless expenditure, 4,000. I'm told it's security of ministers who drive fast when they are taking ministers to meetings. Those traffic fines are for that purpose, and they're in the financials because they were late. They were sent late. Thank you.
No, yesterday after the meeting So you always have this food that we organize, and so members were about to leave the meeting, and I said, no, we can't leave without you eating, because we will be accused of incurring fruitless expenditure. And one of the members here said, oh, but there's fruit here. I think he's the one who raised the issue. I think Honorable Kova was a bit concerned that you may be regarded as a bad employer. That's why he kept on emphasizing. So he wants, that's what he wanted to know. But, and the reason why I said no, I can answer for you, is because I know that South Africans like to rush to the media when they are fine. So you would have known about it if he was a bad employer.
Let me add and say that of all of the people that I know who have left not because they didn't enjoy themselves at TT, and many of them I'm sure we can be able to get back, and I intend to go after some of them to get them back.
Anyway, honourable members, DG and your staff, this brings us to the end of this meeting, and I would like again to repeat what members expressed here, that to congratulate you on in this report, and just to hope that you will keep the bar where you put it, and you can only perform better than what you've presented to us here today. And I'd like to wish you all very well in the year ahead, financial year ahead. This brings us to the end of this meeting. Thank you.